Destiny Blue, the anime artist, and I like drawing and The Geek Show, which you are currently listening to.
Hello and welcome to Far Panel. We're here again with another week filled with comics and manga, by which I mean actual manga this time, not just the lies like I usually tell at this bit.
Oh, we have a manga?
Well, you've got manga news.
I was going to say.
Which is, like, we have something tangentially manga related,
yes.
Like a lot of these shows.
Yes, we do. Now, sometimes we have actual manga as well.
We do.
Which reminds me, I have to chase them up, get more manga. We need more.
Chase up manga ink for more of that manga.
Yes. It's a secret government organization.
That's Rob. Show, do, start.
Okay. Let's kick straight off into the news then. And Judge Dredd is getting a TV series.
Potentially nice.
Potentially
I was going to just straight up say nice, but then I remembered the Stallone movie.
Yeah. I think they're going to be bouncing off the Carl Urban movie rather than the Stallone one. I mean, there's a good...
Gotta hope so.
Well, there's a good... How many years separation between now and the Stallone movie?
Like, literally decades.
And we
but
did...
But still too soon, Rob.
Yeah, it's decades. But we did have, like, in 2012, we did have 2000 AD does The Raid, also known as Dredd.
Also known as people making this TV show. Get Adi Shankar and Carl Urban on this.
Yeah.
They get Judge Dredd. They've proven they get Judge Dredd.
Also, Carl Urban has an amazing name for an actor.
He has an amazing scowl.
He has an amazing jaw for Judge Dredd.
He is a man who can literally make his face a triangle.
Yes, I know. He is Joseph Dredd. He is just... When he puts on that helmet and you see him with the stubble and the stern, you know, line of a mouth, you just think, yes... Batman couldn't have pulled off a jawline like that.
Basically, this story is, I'm probably going to rewatch Dredd tonight.
Basically, yeah. But anyway, just a bit more, just to flesh out the details of it, I Am Global are developing this, and it's going to be called Judge Dredd Mega City 1, which I would have preferred it if they just called it Mega City 1, I'll be honest. I think Mega City 1 rolls off the tongue a lot more than...
To be honest, I think I would have just preferred, like... Judge Dredd.
Well, either one, yeah. Calling it either Judge Dredd or Mega City 1. I think if you were calling it Judge Dredd, the focus has to obviously be on Judge Dredd, but if you call it Mega City 1, you've got more of an option to have Dredd as a character among all the judges and all the violence and all the gangs and everything like that in Mega City 1. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. I guess it's kind of more scope for Judge Dredd to just sometimes be like a periphery character.
Yeah. Which I think would make for a much more interesting...
That was supposed to be the word periphery, but just kind of came out like... character.
Nobody pfs Judge Dredd. I'll have you know, he is the law.
That is almost definitely a crime in Mega City 1.
Exactly. If you pff a judge, then you're going to die.
The sentence is death.
So, yes.
That's a thing what Judge Dredd says.
Yes.
That's one of his catchphrases, like, don't put your hand there, you cheeky boy. That's my favourite Judge Dredd catchphrase.
Yeah.
But along with, I'm on my motorbike now, broom.
It was this during the Kenneth William years.
See, now I really want to write this as the Judge Dredd script, but also have Carl Urban say it. just have him, like, down the road, just go, criminal spotted, engaging pursuit. Knee, nah, knee, nah, knee, nah.
If he's injured and has to be hospitalised, looks at the nurse, goes, matron, in his best Carl Urban voice. I don't know why I'm still on the Kenneth Williams bit.
No, I think we've also both proved we have no idea how Carl Urban actually talks.
I know. Do you know the weird thing, though? Right, as much as I liked the Carl Urban movie, for some reason, and I don't know why... I actually think Stallone had a better voice for Dredd. Not the face or anything like that, just, you know, the tone of his voice, the graveliness and the actual pitch, the delivery, that sort of thing. When he had his helmet on, anyway, after he took his helmet off, then it was all, you know, all bets were off.
No.
You don't want to admit there was anything good about the Stallone Dread movie.
Obviously, everyone is entitled to their opinion, but you're objectively wrong.
I'm not talking about him as an actor. I'm talking about his voice, just, you know, the sound of his voice kind of thing.
I think the key problem here is that, like, in my mind, I can't picture anything other than, I am the law.
Yeah, that's what everyone remembers. But I'm just thinking about, the actual, you know, the sound of his voice, the timbre of it, the pitch of it. You know, that's what I'm thinking about. That's why I say he had a good voice for it. I'm not saying anything else was any good, because yes, it obviously wasn't.
I know, but when I think about it too hard, my nose starts to bleed.
It's a good thing this isn't Japan. That could mean something else.
But don't worry. It's something like from the oneness, the full-on double blood spurt. That's when I think about Carl Urban as Judge Dredd.
I kind of agree with you on that. Carl Urban, he is a handsome fellow, though, isn't he?
Just say, I would happily buy a Carl Urban as Judge Dredd body pillow.
What about a Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool body pillow?
In theory, yes, but I feel like it would smell and not good.
You feel like it would smell what?
Smell a lot and not a good smell.
But see,
I imagine every single Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool body pillow comes pre-used.
Right, yeah. Possibly, we don't know. But what we do know is Donald Glover is making a Deadpool animated series. It's co-created by Donald Glover and his brother, Stephen Glover. And it's been picked up by FXX, which is that like an improved version of FX? Or
I don't
Morris?
Know, but I feel like I'm going to need a sec to just comprehend the fact that that segue worked.
No. See, they called it FXX, which is one letter away from Fox, but it's FX. So is it FX and Fox combined, or is it Extreme FX, or what? I don't get it.
I just thought there wasn't an extra X.
Oh, actually, it does tell me FXX is a subsidiary of 20th Century Fox. I didn't need to speculate.
What does it stand for?
I don't know. Actually, no, it is FX. It is a combination of FX and Fox.
Oh.
Why would you call it FXX? I don't give an FXX.
Because, like, calling it Fox with two X's sounds a bit like a 70s stripper.
Bit like a what?
Like a 70s stripper.
Ah, yeah, true. But there's also that, was it Foxy Brown was the movie, was it?
Yep.
If they are going to do this and they're going to keep to the spirit of the Deadpool movie and the comics, then I can see a lot of comments like, I don't give an FXX in this.
Yeah, something like that, but actually funny.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be very sweary.
Almost definitely.
Kind of bloody.
Almost definitely.
And very fourth wall breaking.
Not even almost definitely. And all that on Cartoon Network.
No, it's not going to be on Cartoon Network.
I know, but you know there's going to be at some point some parent just going, oh, look, little Timmy, there's a new superhero cartoon. You do love those superheroes. I'm sure this will be wholesome family entertainment.
Why is that always Timmy? What happened to Billy?
Probably something horrible.
Yeah. Maybe he thought he could turn into the Hulk if he visited a nuclear testing site. And it all went horribly wrong. Oh, this got dark. But we are talking about Deadpool, so...
Still, I feel like... I don't know, Deadpool probably would kill off a fictional child.
No. Oh. But yeah, I am actually looking forward to Deadpool, the animated series. I think it's about time we had a fun superhero animated series. Because there hasn't really been one for a while. And I don't mean Teen Titans Go with its comedy or Justice League Action with its comedy. When I say fun...
I haven't even seen Justice League Action, so...
Yeah. When I say fun, I mean something that's enjoyable but has a little bit of kooky humour which actually fits in with the actual show and isn't kind of that try-hard humour that relies on internet memes and has the characters going, lol.
You're not a man who should say the word lol.
I know, and neither are cartoons. There should be no cartoon on this planet where a character says lol.
But see, now I'm worried because even though it's a fictional character, I feel like Deadpool can hear us. I would deliberately just fill every episode of screaming hashtag YOLO.
See, I'd accept that from Deadpool because I expect it from Deadpool, you see? But at no point should, Starfire and Raven, should Raven ever say the word lol, because it does not fit with Raven at all.
Now I'm just imagining, like, Robin screaming, Starfire, use your powers to 420, blaze it.
That will probably happen now that you said it.
No, I feel like they probably won't put a weed reference in a children's cartoon.
They put other references in.
Yeah, I'm very scared now.
Yes, and you should be. Moving on to more television news about superheroes and possible superheroes and maybe some supervillains. I'm not sure what to make of this. You know, they're doing that spin-off of the X-Men called The Gifted.
Yep, that's a show what's going to be on the television.
Yeah, well,
which I periodically forget is the thing that's happening.
Yep, they've announced some of the cast members. They've got Stephen Moyer and Amy Acker, who are going to be playing the Gifted's husband and wife couple of Reed and Caitlin Strucker. And they've got Natalie Allen Lind and Percy Hines White, who are going to play their children, who are Lauren and Andy Strucker. So you have the Strucker family in The Gifted, which I found quite an interesting and odd
idea. I don't
want
to watch the Strucker family values.
I know. Because I found this really, really weird because you've got Baron Strucker in Hydra, and then you've got the whole Secret Empire thing going on right now with Hydra taking over, and then you've got, what were they called again? The kids?
Yeah, the Fenris twins, and Andreas Strucker.
Yeah, and I don't know if
maybe like spending a bit too much time in each other's company, if you get my drift.
Yeah, I'm not sure if...
But that's our protagonists.
Well, the thing is, I'm not sure if Lauren and Andy are supposed to be twins, but if they are, then obviously it's a nod to Fenris. And I'm not sure how this is all going to tie in with the rest of the Marvel-based stuff that's on TV. I just found it was interesting that they're basically choosing Strucker.
Yeah, weird reference to go. Also, I'm surprised they can do that, because obviously Marvel own the rights to Hydra, so they can't be Hydra in the show.
Yeah.
And also Marvel have already used Baron Strucker. That's I was going to call him Baron Hydra, but that's not his name, it's Baron Strucker.
Might as well be Baron Hydra.
Yeah, which would be a convenient name for the guy who took over Hydra.
Yeah. I am no longer Strucker. I am now Hydra. Call me Baron Hydra. No. Since I'm now leading, I'm going to raise my level. I'm no longer Baron Hydra. Call me Count Hydra. Count them, the heads. One,
I knew that was coming. Still, I'm just confused as to, like, who flicked through the comics and said, you know who should be our protagonists? The incestuous Nazis.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? Baron Strucker became the leader of Hydra, so why is he still a Baron?
I mean, because he is a Baron.
What, a real-world Baron?
Well, no, because he's a fictional character, Rob. He doesn't exist.
No, I mean real as in, you know, outside of Hydra, he is an actual Baron in some kingdom somewhere.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's like owns land.
Okay. See, if it was like a Hydra title, if they gave him the title of Baron because he's part of Hydra, as soon as he became leader, he could have just gone like, no, I am now Emperor Strucker.
No, because it's like shoving on the full-on nerd glasses. The leader of Hydra is called the Supreme Hydra. For sure, he was Baron Strucker, the Supreme Hydra.
Okay.
Now you got your card. We'll have no factually incorrect humour here, unless I make it, which I frequently do.
Yes, I know. Anyway, on the back of the Gifted announcement, they have also announced a couple of people for the new mutants.
Wow, is it going to be an entire film about those Skrulls who got turned into cows?
I hope so. The New Mutants. You've got Anya Taylor-Joy, who's the star of The Witch and Split. And she's going to be... I've forgotten who she's going to be playing. She's going to play Magic. And Maisie Williams is going to play... is going to be in this as well, from Game of Thrones and various other things. And she's going to play Wolfsbane.
Actually, I'm pretty sure there was a rumour a while ago that she was going to be playing Wolfsbane.
Now, if I remember rightly, Wolfsbane is Ran, isn't it? Ran Sinclair.
Yep.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Ran has a very strong southern accent.
You're wrong. Ulfbin has a very strong Scottish accent.
No, she doesn't.
She's from Scotland.
No, she isn't.
Yes, she is.
Is she?
Yes. Because yes, when she is Ron.
Is she? Because when they did the when she was part of X Factor, they made her sound like she was very southern from the way they wrote the dialogue.
Nope, she was supposed to be Scottish.
Okay, then. Because you remember they did the War and Pieces thing, and they had X Factor going to that Karak place, and Hulk was with the Pantheon and that, and then you had X Factor versus Hulk and the Pantheon, and everybody's fighting over this country, and then you have
let's use this 190s comic, which I'm sure everyone can relate to.
I'm not using the 190s comic. I'm just saying most of my contact with X Factor. I had read a few issues around it, but in the ones that I read, you know, Ran Sinclair, they always seemed to have the dialogue written as though she was supposed to be Southern. I didn't know she was Scottish.
Nope, Scottish.
Okay, if she's Scottish.
I'm pretty sure like it was written supposed to be Scottish.
Well, I don't know. But if she's using phrases like y'all, you know, instead of saying you all, she's saying y'all, you know, why?
Yeah, but like I was going to say, I'm pretty sure it was just badly written, or you misread it.
No, it's probably just badly written. This is the 90s we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. I'm just, as a rule of thumb, we should never rule out the possibility that Rob has just been a dumbass.
Yeah, for me, failure is always an option, right? Let's be clear about this.
I'm being harsh to you this show, I don't know why.
All I'm saying is, it was an easy mistake to make, considering I didn't know much about the character.
Yeah, I guess. But no, she's definitely Scottish.
Right, okay. If she's Scottish, fine. And that was one of my concerns, because I was just thinking about Maisie Williams doing that southern drawl. But if she's Scottish, fine. Maisie Williams can do a Scottish accent all day long.
You assume.
I've heard her do Scottish accent. She's pretty good at it.
When?
There's like videos of her doing interviews and stuff like that on YouTube.
Ah, neato.
So, you know, I've been watching like Graham Norton and all sorts of other talk shows and stuff like that. And Maisie Williams has been on a couple of them, and one of them they had her trying different accents to see which one she was good at.
I mean, Rob, you know how before the show you talked about how you were sick of Maisie Williams' face a bit.
That might be why I'm sick of Maisie Williams' face.
Could the problem be that you've watched hours and hours of YouTube interviews?
Well, I haven't watched hours and hours. It's just she seems to be like a popular guest for a lot of these chat shows because of Game of Thrones, and whenever Game of Thrones starts a new series, she's one of the people that they want to get on because she's, you know, she's bubbly and vivacious and people like talking to her. Which may be why I'm sick of her face.
She's going to be calling you mutants.
Yeah, which may be why I'm sick of her face. Sorry, Maisie. It's not that I'm actually sick of your face. I've just kind of done it to myself. Yeah, this is one of those moments when Rob is officially a dumbass.
And the other one's playing Magic, right?
Yes. Not the card game.
Unless that's like her entire arc is just putting down the cards.
I'm going to tap this land. I hope that's not, because that would make the most boring character of all.
Or would it be the best character, Rob?
Well, she wouldn't be able to do anything if she didn't draw the right card.
Oh, no. See, in my mind, she's an incredibly powerful mutant who can defeat any like opponent in a single blow. But she's also cripplingly addicted to Magic the Gathering. And so the entire film is just trying to convince her to like pause playing for a second to help save the world.
Yes, that could work as well. That could work. I'm still trying to figure out the mechanics of that, though. But, yeah. Anyway, moving on to NBC's Powerless. Bastion.
That hot new TV series that I can't wait for it to air in the UK.
Yes, well, it's probably not going to air in the UK because it's officially been cancelled.
And, like, the series isn't even over yet, is it?
Well, NBC... pulled the show from its schedule with 3 episodes left to air, and it's unknown if those episodes are actually going to be released through other avenues. So the series didn't actually finish when they pulled it.
So maybe they could all just say it's fine. We're not finished, we're just on a break. That way it can be like one of the longest running series ever made.
And the concept of Powerless was what? You have a world full of superheroes? Normal person?
Yeah, well, it was basically like, it's a bunch of office workers in the DC universe.
Yeah.
I thought it was a cool concept.
I think it's a great idea, but I just don't think it works as a TV series. Not the way they did it anyway. Because I think they, from what I saw of it, they were trying too much for it to be, they were trying too hard for it to be funny.
Yeah, I hate it when my comedies try to be funny.
Yeah, I know it's supposed to be a comedy, but there's funny and there's funny.
I'm just having one of those days.
I know. You know what I mean? I don't mean...
Yeah, yeah, well, it's like just trying to force a joke.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When it's trying to... It's like the Big Bang Theory as it was when I left it, right? You know, when it's just kind of... It's like that, you know, it's like that... What are those people called who twist their bodies into pretzels? Contortionists, that's it. Yeah, they're basically trying to twist this humour into some kind of shape that will make it funny instead of just going, look, it's just not funny, let's try something else.
Basically, you have me at, it's like the Big Bang Theory.
Basically. That's what I got when I watched it. It just wasn't funny for a comedy. And it was trying too hard to be funny, so it wasn't going to be funny. And yet it was supposed to be comedy.
I mean, I would say that explains why it got cancelled, but then we're back at the Big Bang Theory.
Yep, exactly. Which has really dropped off the radar when you get right down to it, hasn't it?
Maybe it sacrificed something to a dark god. That's why it's still running.
No, because they're doing the prequel. The Sheldon Cooper prequel.
I know.
It's a travesty. It's shocking, I tell you. Shocking.
Which elder god do you pray to, Chuck Law? Because it's clearly working out well for you. I want me some of that action.
Sheldon Thulu, that's what it is.
Oh, no. That is a horrifying thought.
No. Run away, Amy. Run away.
Anyone who hears him say Bazinga goes irreparably insane.
That's probably why they have those compilations where they just have Sheldon Cooper saying Bazinga.
Yes, they were actually compiled by the CIA to torture enemy informants.
Maybe it's like a chant, you know, the different ways he says Bazinga.
I hope Bazinga for Targan.
Yes. Right, okay. Leaving.
I mean, I think we've actually just fixed the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I know. It'd be so much funnier if Sheldon was actually Cthulhu. Oh, the robot chicken.
Is there any TV show that wouldn't be immediately improved by making one of its characters an Elder God?
Well, no. I think if they're going to choose any version of Cthulhu, I think the Big Bang Theory should go with the robot chicken version of Cthulhu.
Who appeared on Oprah.
Yeah, just burst into the room going, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car, then runs away again.
So yeah, Powerless is cancelled.
Yes. Anyway, leaving that to one side, got some manga news. That's how important Powerless was.
We are a manga show. Keep loving us, Japanese audience, please. You're the majority of our audience. We need you. We need you, Japan. Please don't leave us.
Right. The 41st annual Kodansha Manga Awards have happened, and we have winners.
Oh, that's good.
Yep. So, the winner of the best shonen manga was Altair, A Record of Battles, or Shokoku no Altair, by Kotono Kato. And that's been serialized in Monthly Shonen magazine. And the idea of it is, for generations, the Turki Devleti and the Bolt Rhine Empire have stood in stern opposition to each other. Then one night, when an imperial minister is found assassinated, the two nations are plunged into a potentially explosive situation. As the generals of Turkey's council cry for war, Mahmud comes to discover the devious truth behind the assassination. Thus, the young Pasha's battle for his country, peace, and trust in his fellow man begins. And it's a really good series, and very, very underrated.
Yeah, but Rob, is it as good as Naruto?
It's superior.
But Rob, Naruto is the best Japanimation.
Yes, but Shokoku no Altair is still superior. Anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, so is it like a historical one then?
Yeah, it's a historical fiction. So, and it's one that I think you'd like. It's not.
Oh, yeah, like, I am very interested in that.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I think manga does really well is historical fiction. You're a big fan of Vinland Saga, but I think you'd probably like Emma as well, by Morikaru, which is, kind of old English, but dealing with a maid. And it's very, it deals with, like, the old English class system, stuff like that. It's really interesting. And very sweet at the same time, and also kind of vicious at times, because people from the upper class could be vicious like that without people actually realizing. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I assume you mean vicious in like the actual sense of the word, not just they were super sassy.
No, I mean vicious as in the actual sense of the word. Let's put it this way. There's one bit where they want their daughter to marry the son of a different family, but that son is interested in somebody else. So they have that person kidnapped, the woman that the son's interested in, have her kidnapped and shipped off to America.
I like the sound of this. I mean, as a story, not like as a tactic for dealing with unwanted love rivals.
Yeah, but you see what I mean. That's what I mean by vicious. But Morikaru has also done another one called Otoyo Megatari, The Cloth Road, which is really interesting and deals with Mongols.
I do like me some Genghis Khan.
Yeah, so I think that I could recommend loads of historical fiction from the manga side of things for you. It's a really, really good area to look at manga. Anyway, best show...
Is there a manga genre where you don't have, like, 1,000 things you can recommend?
No, I am good with manga. Anyway, best shoujo manga was Peter Juk, or something like that. I can't really pronounce it properly, but it's Peter and then the letters JK together by Maki Miyoshi, and that's serialized in the magazine Besatsu Friend. And the manga revolves around a first-year high school student named Kako, who is a beginner at love, and a handsome policeman named Kota. The two meet at a mixer and are immediately attracted to each other, but Kota starts treating her coldly after he realizes she is a high school student. The two decide to get married instead of just date, and after getting Kako's parents' permission, they marry secretly and have a commuter marriage until Kako graduates from high school. And basically the manga follows their trials and tribulations through their marriage. Shoujo's the teenage girl one. Shonen is teenager, but it's loose. Anyway, I forgot to mention the other nominees for Best Shonen Manga included Fire Force, which is that one that I talked about where they fight fire with fire.
Probably a good thing that one didn't win then, since you weren't a fan, were you?
Well, it puzzled me as to why you would fight fire with fire. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Like, I think we already had a whole thing on that.
Yeah. Anyway, the two other nominees for that award, for the Best Shonen Award, were Juliet of the boarding school, or Kishuku Gakko no Juliet, and Dagashi Kashi, which is quite popular at the moment. The other nominees for the Best Shoujo Manga were Omoi, Omoware, Furi, Furare, Deguchi Zero, and Haramatsu Bokura, which I'm not even going to bother translating any of those. Best General Manga was The Fable by Katsuhisa Minami, and that is basically about a fable genius at killing who resides somewhere hidden in Osaka, and taught since childhood to obey the orders of his boss. He is ordered to live in Osaka as a normal person for 1 year in order for the boss to lay low.
Okay.
Which actually sounds like an interesting premise, doesn't it? You got somebody who knows nothing but killing, but they're told, just be a normal person for a year.
Yeah, I couldn't see. I assume it's like got a comedic element to it.
I think it probably does. It might be one of those drama comedy things. Other nominees for the Best General Manga are Grand Blue, Interviews with Monster Girls, Tokyo Tarareba Girls, and Otaku ni Koi wa Muzukashi. Sorry. And I'm not going to bother translating any of those either. So, yeah. Those were the three awards that won.
Oh, okay. That was all the awards.
Yeah, that's all the awards. There was no others, because they integrated a bunch of the awards in 2015 into just Best Shonen, Best Shoujo, and Best General. There are other awards.
So they don't have like a Best Seinen?
Best Seinen, no. There are other awards.
Speak Japanese.
Sorry?
I know my Japanese words.
Yeah. There are other manga awards. And the Kodansha Awards are important as kind of a marker. It's kind of like how, you know, you have the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes, but they're normally just a marker for the Oscars. So the Kodansha Awards are kind of similar to... similar to those, they're important, but they're not the one that all the manga authors want.
Okay, so it's more like a tipping you off for things that are probably going to win the big awards.
Yeah, basically. So, anyway, that was your news. We're going to take a break there, and we'll be back in a couple of moments with comics.
what you've done. I'm melting! Melting! Oh, what a world, what a world! Who would have thought a good little girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness?
Ah,
the bomb!
Ah. There really is nothing like a first leather-bound edition of a classic Victorian podcast. Hello, we're Literary Loitering from The Geek Show, and we cover literally all types of books, from hardbacks to paperbacks to sometimes the words within them. If any of these things interest you, why not pop in and give us a visit on Literary Loitering.
Hello. I'm Professor Elemental, and whenever I'm not riding a badger around my grounds or hitting my monkey butler with a stick, I'm listening to The Geek Show, and my God, I love it.
The Geek Show is the largest independent podcast network out there, and to be independent, we need a little bit of help every now and again. So if you want something to show your love of The Geek Show, head over to thegeekshow.co.uk, click on the shop, and buy some of our lovely wares.
Welcome back, and now it's time for Andrew to take us into the big pile of comics.
Yep. So, I'm going to kick things off. I decided the other day to check out X-Men Gold.
Ooh, yes.
And it is everything I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
By which I mean Blair.
So, is this following directly on from X-Men Prime that I read then?
Yep. So, this is the... Well, I was going to say new X-Men team, but it's not really... Basically, the old X-Men with Kitty Pryde as the leader. You've got Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, Wolverine, and Prestige, which is what Marvel Girl is calling herself now.
Prestige?
Yeah.
Sounds like a car.
I feel like we've made that like exact same joke. But yes, it does.
We probably made it about a different character. I don't think we made it about Prestige.
They all sound like cars. So I think kind of the idea with this book is it's like taking the X-Men back to their roots. And by I think, I mean literally half the characters say, we've gone back to our roots, isn't this a good thing? Which
no.
is like kind of only a step up from just a full-on picture of writer Mark Guggenheim screaming, please love us now.
Okay.
It's so boring, Rob. It's just like the most generic cookie-cutter X-Men story of like, they've got to stop the Masters of Evil from doing their bad stuff, and they've kidnapped the mayor of New York. But also, surprise, turns out they're actually working for an anti-mutant racist. And oh, it's just like...
This sounds...
It feels like the kind of story I've read like at least 1,000 times before.
Yeah, it sounds horrible. I'll be honest. It doesn't sound interesting at all.
No, it isn't. It's basically what Mark Guggenheim seems to have done is gone back... Read every single issue of like Chris Claremont's X-Men, but like maybe taken them all, fed them into a machine, and kind of worked out an algorithm for what is the most generic possible Chris Claremont story I could possibly write, and then messed it up with his horrible, horrible dialogue.
I was going to say, because didn't Chris Claremont do God Loves, Man Kills? Wasn't that an X-Men storyline from him?
Basically, if the answer is a classic X-Men story, well, if you're asking, did he write insert classic X-Men story here?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
And
he did basically all of them.
And they're basically, this new version is trying to recapture the glory of Claremont and failing hard.
Yeah, so hard.
It's
just, all the dialogue is just, it's so clunky. I think there's like a bit where Mark Guggenheim obviously is trying to set up like some new running joke thing.
Yeah.
Where Kitty Pryde says, we're going to do a thingy-majig. And then someone says, what's a, whatever the thing is. And then it's some big explodey thing. And it really comes across as, like the first one is, we're going to do a TFS.
The hell's a TFS?
I think they're fighting Terrax and he's all, what's a TFS? She's like, telekinetic fastball special.
Oh, God.
But also, I think the main reason I wanted to bring this comic up, because there's a moment in the first issue that just really rubs me the wrong way. So basically, the X-Men, they're based in Central Park now.
Yeah.
And apparently the idea is, because they were in limbo during Inhumans versus X-Men, it is they just kind of pulled it out of limbo, plunked it right down in Central Park.
Yeah, which is what happened in X-Men Prime, and that confused me.
Yeah. And now also they have to pay, like, huge amounts of property tax to, like, the New York government, and they're getting like really shirty about it.
The X-Men.
It's like, yeah, the X-Men. But it's like, you're basically squatting is what you're doing. Like, you came and you shoved your school on, like, not just a piece of property, but, like, a major tourist attraction and said, this is where we live now.
Yeah, and it's public property. It doesn't belong to any particular individual. It belongs to the country.
Yeah, and, like, them being annoyed at the property tax, I think it's kind of indicative of, like, this series' main problem. Is that it's a moment that's obviously supposed to be kind of comedic, but just hasn't been thought through at all, and makes them seem just really douchey.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I went off X-Men, was just this idea that for some reason the X-Men were supposed to be... See, I liked X-Men when they were the underdogs, when they were on the back foot. But then slowly over, I think it was the 90s and the early noughties, especially with like Ultimate X-Men and that, they came this arrogance. All of a sudden, they're kind of superior to everybody else. And all the characters to me feel like that. They feel like they're supposed to be better.
Well, I'd say this is true of X-Men Gold, if it weren't for the fact that most of the characters aren't even really characters.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's pretty much only Kitty Pryde. Oh, also, by the way, Kitty Pryde is now just going by Kitty Pryde instead of Shadowcat, because... Why not?
Yeah, who needs a secret identity?
Yeah, you've pretty much got her, and like Wolverine gets some character development because, of course, it's Wolverine. So now we get to go back to the good old days of, hey, do you want some more Wolverine? We're gonna slap some more Wolverine in your face. Hey, do you know who we haven't seen for a whole panel? Wolverine. Better fix that.
Can I take out my Wolverine and slap it in your face?
Yep. Meanwhile, Colossus and Nightcrawler are kind of just running around in the background, and Marvel Girl, because, you know, I'm just going to call her Marvel Girl from now on, because screw you, Mark Guggenheim. Like, I think she gets about one full-on, like, bit of dialogue, which is to explain that Kitty thought she should change her name because Marvel Girl and Phoenix are, like, they're in the past, but this is the future, so I should get a new code name.
And they chose Prestige.
Yeah, and also... Apparently no one else needs to do... Because, you know, Wolverine, that's a hip and fresh new superhero name.
See, I think Wolverine should get a new superhero name. I think they should ditch Wolverine because that's the past. And they should give Wolverine a new name, which is Old Man with the Old Man Claw. Old Man Claw.
Stabby Grandpa.
Stabby Grandpa, yeah, I like that. Or Punchy Stabby Grandpa.
But yeah, it's just... It's so dumb, Rob. It's so dumb and boring. And you know what?
What?
Part of me is quite glad that Ardy and Syaf did a racist and got fired.
At least they made
His
it interesting.
Art is ugly.
Yeah. Well, at least he made it more interesting than the comic actually is.
That's true. That's like... Actually, I forgot to check if they've actually left it in the version I read.
I don't think they have. I think they removed it from a lot of them.
No, the one I've got has still got the kind of Kitty Pryde with Jew written next to her head.
Okay.
Because, like, the idea is, like, it's the storefront to a jewellery shop.
Yeah.
But half of it's obscured by her head.
What about Colossus's t-shirt? Is that still got that thingy? What is it? Austin 316? No, it's not that.
Yep, QS 551.
All right, okay, so they haven't removed them then?
Nope, not in this version.
Okay, right. Shall we move from bland to...
Oh my god, there's also a bit where, like, they're talking about the softball they're playing, and Wolverine actually says, you know, it's normal. Normal's always been in short supply for this outfit. It's like gold.
Oh god.
I hate this book, Rob.
He doesn't break out into always believe in your soul. You got the power to know. You're indestructible.
I think that page must be missing.
See, that would actually raise the tone of this if Wolverine just suddenly burst out into Spandau Ballet. And it would make Wolverine a much more enjoyable character because I'm kind of bored of him.
See, we fixed Wolverine as well.
Yeah. I mean, point me to one grandpa who doesn't like to get drunk and sing. The ones that can drink, you know. Not the ones who can't drink for, you know, health or religious reasons.
But yeah, I'm done with X-Men Gold. I'm sick of it.
Right. Okay.
Take me away from it, Rob.
I'm going to give you a choice then, right? I'm going to give you a choice. Because I went a little bit left field, but I also stayed fully on track with a couple of things. So you can have, you've got a nice big selection for your first, for the first lot, by the way.
Ooh, how exciting.
Yes. You can have the latest exploits of the unbelievable Gwenpool, highly recommended. Black Bolt, or Blackagar Baltagon, Weapon X, Superwoman, got to throw a bit of DC in there, Royals, which kind of ties into X-Men Gold and, well, it doesn't, but it does. It's kind of parallel, following on from Inhumans versus X-Men. Or, to go completely left field, Boom Studios, from them, we have Grass Kings, we have The Old Guard from Image Comics, which is written by Greg Rucker, and an odd one that I found from Albatross Comics, and it's written by Eric Powell, called Hillbilly.
I mean,
choose Hillbilly.
God damn it, Rob. I was going to, but no, I can't. I can't choose Hillbilly, because I've got to be contrary. So do Grass Kings.
Grass Kings, okay. Yep. It's a good selection, though, isn't it? Right, okay.
It is. That's a healthy selection.
Yeah. Grass Kings is written by Matt Kind, and the art is done by Tyler Jenkins, who did Peter Panzerfaust. And basically, the idea is very simple. You have an area of the US called the Grass Kingdom, and this area has been fought over and claimed and fought over and claimed since the settlers first went to the States. And now it's kind of an independent area. It's still subject to the US government, but the people who live there don't believe that they are part of the US. And they have their own little town, their own electricity supply, their own entertainment, their own police officer. And the town is run by three brothers. And, you know, it's basically, they describe it as a fiefdom of the hopeless and the lost. And it's basically where people who went looking for a promised land and never found it have ended up. So it's kind of a depressing setting. And you've got the three brothers. You got Robert, who is the leader. And he, at one time, he was a good man. He was, you know, he had a wife, he had a daughter, but then something happened. An accident happened and his daughter disappeared. And the stress from that caused his marriage to fail. And so now he's kind of an empty shell of a man. But he's still supposed to be the leader of the Grass Kingdom. And he's got two brothers. One of his brothers works as the police officer. Another one is kind of a handyman going around helping fix things. And everything is kind of normal. You've got the normal county sheriff for the US government, who is about 40 miles away. And they keep trying to move these people off because these people are basically squatters, but they're squatters who've been there for over a century, and they've built up this area themselves. But the main US government, the main state government, they don't want the Grass Kingdom to exist. But there's not much they can do about it, short of sending in military force. But that then would lead to its own problems. There would be a huge public backlash against whoever made that order. Do you see what I mean? So it's a very kind of political idea.
Yeah, and obviously they could fight back with their mutant powers.
Well, there is no mutant powers in this, which is one of the reasons why I like it. I mean, the art style is very watercolor, the art style, but I like it because it's very different to the normal comics that we read. It's much more grounded. Everything starts changing on the day that Robert, he's sitting there and he's just kind of lost in his own memories. And then he sees a woman kind of dragging herself out of the water. And so he runs over to help her. And it turns out that this woman is the wife of the mayor of the nearest town who'd been trying to get rid of the Grass Kingdom. Is it the mayor or the sheriff? Actually, I think sheriff. She's the wife of the sheriff. But he accidentally mistakes her for his missing daughter. And then it goes on to this whole idea that there's a killer in the Grass Kingdom. Somebody killed Robert's daughter, and they're not sure who it was. Could it have been a bear? Could she have drowned? What actually happened to her? Nobody knows, which is why Robert has always held out this hope that maybe she's still alive. and why he makes the mistake of this woman being his daughter, because she's coming out of the lake.
So his daughter's not is missing, not dead.
His daughter's missing, not dead.
Okay, because I just had this image of like a dead body. Was it a bear? Was it drowning? Yeah. Guess there's no way to tell.
But the thing is, Robert asked the authorities, the US government authorities, to drag the lake, and they found the bones of all sorts of people and animals in the lake. But these are old. The Grass Kingdom has its own rules. They protect their own, and they're all armed, because this is America, by the way. They're all armed, some of them armed to the teeth, which is, again, one of the reasons why, short of military force, they probably can't move them away. They've got lookouts at loads of different points, and they're always on the watch for intruders, for strangers, people who don't belong there. It is very much a case of, you're not from around here, boy, are you? Now, the great thing...
They sound like lovely people.
Yeah. The thing is, the nice thing about Grass Kingdom is... Grass Kings, I should say. The nice thing about it is that the way it's written, the way it's drawn, it adds a humanity to these people that you wouldn't see in a news report. If you remember, there was that whole thing with the squatters down south when they basically built up that little village and they had to have the police forcibly remove them.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. This is kind of like that, but this is adding, this is kind of from the perspective of the people who live there rather than the authority figures. I mean, there is a brutality to living there. Some guy gets hired by the local sheriff to basically start a war with the Grass Kingdom. So he goes there and he starts, beating people up, causing trouble, wants to kill Robert, who's the leader of the Grass Kingdom. Which would then incite everybody to basically fight back against the local authorities, then the military can be dragged in. He ends up getting killed, but they end up with a dead body, and they're not sure what they can do about it, until the crazy war veteran who lives on the island in the middle of the lake says, I can solve your problem. And then at the end of it, there's just this gruesome scene, because he's got birds, and they're basically picking the flesh off the bones of this body. Because he's taken it to the island and fed it to the birds.
This is from Boom Studios.
Yes, the same...
Lovely, nice Boom Studios. What does Lumberjanes?
Yes, I was about to say, the same company that does Lumberjanes.
This is not the story I was expecting from you, Rob.
Not just Lumberjanes, they do Adventure Time. You know, Brave Chef Brianna. Giant Days is this as well, isn't it? So...
It is, you've... I just wanted something nice to bring me down from how angry I got at X-Men.
All I can say is, Grass Kings has got me interested. It is essentially politics, drama, murder, mystery, that sort of thing, all combined into one, with an interesting setting, with interesting characters, and it's the kind of comic book that I like reading to take away from all of the superheroes, because sometimes superheroes can just be boring. As you well
like
know, Andrew.
X-Men.
Yeah, as you well know. Anyway, over to you.
Yep. So, speaking of superheroes that we apparently hate now, but I still like, I have been reading the first issue of the new Guardians of the Galaxy series.
Ah.
So this kind of takes off from the Free Comic Book Day issue that I did a little while ago.
Yeah.
But the Guardians are back together after being stranded on Earth. And except things don't seem to be going well, they're kind of all at each other's throat a bit. But anyway, despite that, they've been hired by the Grandmaster to steal an item of great worth from basically a planet which is like just a planet-sized bank with ridiculously high-level security.
Yeah.
So we most of the issue is taken up by this kind of really fun sequence where they travel down to the planet in a mech shaped like Galactus.
Yes.
Which basically makes everyone on the planet panic and kind of fly off world. So while they're doing that, they kind of run out to crack the safe. But of course, being the Guardians of the Galaxy, things go a bit wrong. They basically get caught by a pair of guards who they just find getting jiggy with it in one of the vaults. And one of the guards just like turns to the Guardians and goes, so the planet isn't about to explode then. Yeah, just like you see Rocket kind of laughing and just... I take it Galactus is not about to eat our planet.
Yeah.
But still, they managed to kind of make it off the planet just in time with the card and hand it over to the Grandmaster.
Yeah.
But in doing that, we learn a basically, the dynamic of the Guardians has changed. Star-Lord is trying to keep them all together, but Rocket kind of just wants to go off and do his own thing. Groot is stuck as in kind of like his baby form.
Yeah.
You know, I mentioned, again, to conveniently tie in with the film, but also Drax is a pacifist now, which I think is possibly like one of my favorite bits of this series. It's just Drax is like a really surly pacifist, just like quoting these like weird pseudo philosophical things. Just with Star-Lord telling him, Drax, can you please just break the wall down? Just him saying, but some walls aren't meant to be broken. And also there's Gamora, who's got some kind of secret side deal with the Grandmaster. So it's all very mysterious, but also a lot of fun.
Excellent. Excellent.
Like, I think this is probably basically the Guardians of the Galaxy series people wanted with Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, but we didn't get.
This manages to capture a lot of the fun that makes the movies work. And I very much appreciate that.
See, I'm interested in if they do a third Guardians movie, would they turn Drax pacifist? Because I'd love to see that.
Oh my God. Dave Bautista refusing to hit things would be a joy to see.
Yes. Yes, it would. I totally agree. So, my turn, is it again?
Oh, especially with, like, his whole literal thing.
Yes.
Like, can you just imagine, like, that they get caught in prison and Star's just like, okay, guys, we need to break out. And Drax is just like, no, no breaking.
I refuse to harm anybody ever again.
They're in the spaceship. Okay, let's punch it.
Yes.
Just Drax screaming, no!
Do not punch things.
That would be a great Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yes. Or if Peter's about to dance, you know, give me some music. Let's kick it. No kicking.
I think you should probably just stop Star-Lord from dancing anyway.
Yeah, true, true, true.
Okay, that's me, so...
Right. Okay. So your dealer's choice is still active, by the way. You have.
Now we'll do hillbillies.
Hillbilly. Just hillbilly.
No, I demand plural hillbillies.
No, it's just one. It's just hillbilly.
Well, you're going to have to talk about it twice then.
I may not have to, right? Now, Hillbilly is by Eric Powell. And it's from Albatross Comics. And Eric Powell's done, I think he did like a short story anthology anyway. I found the first six issues of Hillbilly, and what attracted me to it when I found it was the cover, which was a guy. Basically, the first issue of Hillbilly was basically a guy who looks like a mountain man, you know, with the fur stole and the top hat and a huge cleaver, and behind him is a massive bear. I thought, you know, this looks odd, kind of interesting. Never heard of Albatross Comics before. Never heard of Eric Powell before. So this could be worth a punt. I shall buy it. So I bought it. First six issues. And you know what? I loved all six issues.
Nice.
Right. Hillbilly is one of those rare things that you pick up by chance, right? And you absolutely adore. And you know exactly why. It is a dark... dark fantasy set in America in kind of the you know, it's got a little bit of that southern Louisiana type thing about it, but it also covers pretty much the entirety of America, but it never actually explains where in America it actually is. You just know it's in America, and it's all about this guy called Rondell. Now Rondell is the guy with the cleaver, and Rondell is a lonely man who wanders the wilderness hunting witches. And there are a lot of witches in America. And they went over with the settlers. They found a new land and started to spread their evil throughout the new land. And it goes...
So the witches are in fact on 99 of his problems.
Yes. He has, he has all of the witches as his problems. And the witches are all kind of hunting him in turn, and at the same time as he's hunting them. And the first six issues is basically each issue is a separate story in its own right. And I love the fact that it's episodic because it can jump around in time a little bit. The first issue kind of explains Rondell's history, but you're never sure if it's actually the truth or not. Rondell basically was a boy who was born without eyes, and he was having he went, basically, his mum didn't let him leave. He had to tie a rope around himself so he couldn't leave the house, so he could always find his way back because he had no eyes. It was just kind of skin covering it. And one of the local girls went to go hunting a bear and dragged him along. There was an accident caused by a couple of kids with a catapult who liked to pick on Rondell. They missed killing the bear. The bear chased them. Rondell fell off a ledge, ended up in a river, and got picked up by a witch who he saved by accident. She was in the form of a crow. And so Rondell's angry about the fact that his family and, you know, he's born with no eyes and everything like that. So the witch uses the anger, and she introduces him to this object that she found called the Devil's Cleaver, which is, I love the idea of it, because the Devil's Cleaver isn't a weapon per se, right? And this is one of the nice little bits of humor that's thrown in, because these are essentially very, very dark stories. The Devil's Cleaver is one of the many deadly utensils that reside in Satan's kitchen.
Right there, is it right next to the Whisk of Doom?
Well, possibly, because everything that Satan touches becomes a powerful instrument of dark magic, and the while other things aren't as ominous as the cleaver, there is the treacherous Devil's Ladle, and there's just this panel of a guy just standing there, and just this clawed hand reaching out with a ladle and hitting them on the head, and the guy just suddenly turned into dust and skeleton. So anyway, this witch basically gives Rondell the cleaver, takes him back to his home, and shows him what remains of his home, because his family has been killed. She slices open his face where his eyes are supposed to be. Says, "Look, this is what that witch has done. Now find her and kill her." But the first thing Rondell does is kill the witch who's brought him, and he swears bloody vengeance on all witches from then on. And this is Rondell as a boy carrying the Devil's Cleaver, and now he's a man, and he wanders the wilderness hunting witches. And his best friend is a bear, a giant bear.
It's a good friend to have.
Well, the thing is, it's a giant female bear, I should add. And it's great because this bear can actually talk. This bear has reached this level where the bear can talk. And there are other witch hunters wandering the wilderness who all know Rondell, and Rondell knows them. And they have this kind of, some of them he's friends with, some of them are kind of frenemies. Some of them outright hate him because he's the best at what he does.
Frenemy witch hunter. Does he tweet mean things about them?
No, he doesn't. But he doesn't suffer fools either. I like this series. I like it because it is dark. The characters are wonderfully vibrant in short doses, and that stops them becoming stagnant. You know, the fact that it's episodic really lends itself, because it's more like reading a set of folk tales about a particular character rather than reading a continuous story. And that sometimes is, you know, so if they can get the formula right, which Eric Powell has done with Hillbilly, it can really work. The artwork is really good, by the way. It's really nice. It's very... There's a little bit of the elements of underground comics in there. There's a little bit of kind of the old style, you know, when they were trying to go for the realism, but with a bit of what's the word? You know, when they do like the oversized cartoony faces, not expressionist.
Caricature.
There's a little bit of caricature when it comes to the design of the faces, stuff like that. But Eric Powell really manages to sell it. He really manages to sell the idea of these characters being just so vibrant and different. You know, everybody, you know, nobody really has the same face or the same body shape or anything like that, which is one of the things I like about it, because there are loads of characters that you'll come across over the course of these first six issues. I think Hillbilly is an amazing, amazing piece of work so far. I think that there's humor, but there's also, but it's not overpowering. You know, it's in little doses, healthy little doses, and where it happens, it is necessary. But I think Rondell as a character is, he's my Wolverine. Everyone else can have Wolverine. I've got Rondell now.
Thank goodness. Now there's finally enough Wolverine to go around the rest of us.
Yeah, but Rondell is so much more
resource.
Rondell is so much more interesting than Wolverine. He's basically the old, you know, he's the lonely old man who's going around. He's got a purpose, and you know how Wolverine used to be, always hunting Weapon X, always trying to find his past.
Yeah, I mean, this would be great if any of us could read it, but you heard Rob. None of us can read Hillbilly because Rondell is his now.
Yes. Okay, that's us done for the day then. So you can find all of our shows on iTunes, Audioboom, and various other places on the internet, or just check out our website. If you're listening on iTunes or Audioboom, then subscribe and keep up to date with all our latest shows. You'll find all of our other shows on those services as well. Cinema Eclectica, Keyframe, The Main Geek Show. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And we'll see you next time with more comics and manga, hopefully, stuff. Until then, I have been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.